Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 17th of June, recording at 9:08 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. In stock markets, the Asian markets were mostly easier. Two exceptions were Japan, which is slightly higher, but less than 1%, and China, far more important these days, which is very steady within striking distance of its highs, where most of these other Asian markets have rolled over. European stock markets were weaker today, and we saw a number of declines in the 2% region. Well, they were sort of 1.5 to 2% on average, a little less on the UK FTSE, but they were all down. The America's markets are all down, save at least the ones I can see on my screen, save the NASDAQ Composite Index, which and also the NASDAQ 100, which managed to score small gains here today. Wall Street wasn't down much, but it did close. It did reverse a small rally in the Dow and the S&P prior to the close, but again, we're only down just 1.25% on the S&P. That's 0.14%. Now, elsewhere, the U.S. dollar, which has been firm recently as stock markets eased, but not today, and the dollar did give up some ground. Currently at 80.227 on the U.S. dollar dollar index. The euro is pushed back up to 139.45. With a softer dollar, precious metals were firmer today, and gold is currently trading just under 940. Silver also picked up a bit, currently 14.32 for the July contract, but platinum did not manage. It's 1209. Did not manage to rally, that is. And the energy sector is steady, with crude holding above $70, although it has lost upside momentum. Natural gas extending some gains. The agricultural commodities were mixed, mostly a few small gains on the weaker dollar. Okay, what's going on here overall? Well, I have been saying, we have both been saying here at Fuller Money, that after a magnificent rally for global stock markets, some of them extending for 14 consecutive weeks, India was one example, and you know, it nearly doubled on the Sensex index during that period of its rally from its March lows. And we have been saying that this is overextended. All these rallies were overextended in the short term. A number of them had begun to lose upside consistency. And we saw that first, really, among the OECD markets, Japan excluded, they didn't become choppy, but they just sort of lost upside momentum and went into trading ranges, narrow trading ranges. They're beginning to break down out of, or have broken down out of, those ranges. And markets that had accelerated higher have mostly come to a halt. There are a few holdouts, Chile, although I haven't looked at that today, but very much up near resistance. Indonesia has been very firm, but certainly looks overextended. But most stock markets, if you look around the globe, and I've been reviewing them in the last few days in Comment of the Day. You can do that at any time, of course. I'm going to review more of them here today. But the majority show the downward dynamics. In some instances, we're shaping up for weekly keys. And a few of them saw those last week. all suggesting that these rallies are losing upside momentum and that we are spilling over into a correction. This is very much in line with the comment on the 3rd of June when we first started to see these key reversals in a number of different markets. Those are daily key reversals. When I mentioned the possibility that that day's action amounted to one of those all-change signals, you'll be familiar with that from the chart seminar, and veteran subscribers will know about it, where suddenly you get some dynamic moves that halt the uptrends and also the downtrends for a while. And we get these corrective phases. So our view really is that stock markets have entered or are in the process of entering this corrective phase. If we're lucky, it will just be a small reaction within 10%. But there's a very good possibility that it will be a bigger reaction than that, qualifying in our terminology as a correction. And that would last longer and exceed the 10% to the downside. Now, that is easily achievable by the high beta markets, but of course they're the ones that had performed so stunningly on the way up, and many of those that did so well on the way up were also the markets that were clearly in a bottoming out and base building phase from October or early November onwards. And those are fuller money themes, primarily the Asian emerging markets, the resources markets, particularly the South American resources markets, and of course there are also some Asian emerging markets, and they have done exceptionally well, as you would expect. The laggards have been the Western stock markets, particularly the USA and most of continental Europe. But even then, they staged pretty good moves on the upside, with the S&P, for instance, rallying, I think it was 41% before entering this current setback. But that's 41% in weak U.S. dollars. And if you show the performance of the S&P in other currencies, and you can see that in the library, then that percentage gain, well, it's halved in a number of instances, and it's worth looking at those charts. Now, I've been saying that one of the things that concerns me is that we will see a longer reaction than most people are actually expecting, a longer pullback and consolidation. As a matter of fact, I think I'll make a distinction between the markets that have really done well and broke decisively above their 200-day moving averages, which have now leveled out and are even beginning to turn up, and will continue to turn up, I think, during this consolidation. I'll talk about a mean reversion consolidation for those markets, and they're all the ones that I had mentioned earlier, those Asian emerging markets and the resources markets, particularly the developing or emerging or progressing, as I often like to call them, emerging markets. For the Western markets, though, what we really saw following the downward breaks in February and early March, we saw a terrific rally taking most of those indices back up to some earlier rally highs that had been seen since the October climactic selling. So therefore, if my hunch is right and that we are going to see a longer pause now, then That pullback would amount to base formation extension, and that could be quite lengthy. That could last for a number of months. Now, it's hardly the end of the world, but it would really revive that view that we had only seen a temporary bear market rally. And to be totally objective, well, Owen and I have said on a number of occasions that the action that we were seeing was not consistent with bear market rallies. It was consistent with the beginning of new bull markets. And that really the action that we had seen since the end of October and early November was consistent with the bottoming out process, which marks the end of a bear market, and the end of a bear market must also simultaneously be the beginning of a new bull market, which almost always involves some substantial base formation development. So that is really what we've seen. But Owen and I have also both emphasized that if one wants absolute confirmation of base formations and a new bull market, and of course confirmation comes way after the lows have been seen, as we've mentioned dozens of times, but confirmation would include several factors mentioned previously, and I'll just review them again quickly. We would need to see a setback beyond the brief pauses that we saw on the way up from the March lows. And a positive sign would be if during that setback the stock market indices held at least 50% of their gains from the March lows before starting to range back upwards again towards their highs. If they go beyond that 50% level, that's not ensuring that the whole thing was just a bear market rally, but it would weigh on sentiment. That's a fairly obvious point. And the deeper the correction, the more sideways ranging we are likely to see, because a deeper correction would damage sentiment a little bit more. And while sentiment has improved a lot recently, bit of a contrary indicator of that, I maintain that it's skin deep, and that a lot of people were sucked in by a momentum move on the upside, and they may well take fright quickly in this environment, or would be inhibited in terms of buying. The probability is that a setback, a correction, or just a decent reaction would be a good opportunity in which to accumulate some more of the things that people wished that they had perhaps bought during the lows or near the lows, which are always scary times, of course. Now, so one factor that I mentioned for confirmation of that bull is that we would need to see a genuine setback, which then found support well above the March lows, contributing to a higher reaction low, and then to see the stock market indices in the weeks following that reaction push back up to new recovery highs, so giving a higher high as well, thus defining an overall upward trend. And that would also include sustained moves above the, this is for additional confirmation, sustained moves above the 200-day moving averages. Now, a positive point is that most of those laggards that hit new lows, were still hitting new lows in March, did break up above their 200-day moving averages, although not all that much in the case of the S&P, for instance. What we would need to see for that final confirmation is moves back above those 200-day moving averages, which also need to round around and turn upwards. As I say, you don't get that until you are really well off the lows. But I do want to point that out. We want to be just totally objective in here. We're not cheerleaders for uptrends or downtrends. But net it all out, and we've got two-tier markets. We have the higher growth markets, the resources, the Asian emerging markets, and we have the slow growth markets or negligible growth markets, which are the OECD economies. And that's going to remain the case for quite a while. Now, on GDP growth and all those green shoots and so on, well, there's a fair amount of cheerleading that takes place and all that, both from the financial community and also politicians. And it's understandable and all part of the part of the game. But although I haven't commented on the economic developments that much in the last, say, two weeks or so, I have repeatedly said that we remained among the more pessimistic people regarding GDP growth. Now, just to spell it out again, though, we did feel that it really didn't get worse. It doesn't get much worse than that meltdown that we saw in the fourth quarter. That was paralytic. But the first quarter of this year, I'm talking about, of course, the fourth quarter of last year, first quarter of this year was pretty bad as well, the aftershocks. And so a very, very weak economic data. And the second quarter, what I've been looking for is progressive quarters of less bad news. So the second quarter results, I think, will still be weak, but less so, considerably less so than the fourth quarter last year and the first quarter this year. And by the third quarter, we should still see less bad and even some improvements. And indeed, China has already begun to show some improvements, and I think India has as well. And that will be true of the leaders. But really, we will have done well if we see Wall Street and the continental European markets in the UK, Ireland, if we see them, their economies moving into positive territory in the third or more likely fourth quarters, that'll be a good achievement. And it's, I think the odds are slightly in favor of that actually happening. The quantitative easing does work if they keep on with it for long enough. Right now, what's interesting is that people, luminaries from the IMF to various economist columnists, are all saying, don't withdraw the money supply. Central banks really in hoping to dampen down inflationary expectations because they don't want to see bond yields, long-dated government bond yields rise, have been pointing out the green shoots. And a lot of other people have said, well, you know, there's not much there in the way of green shoots. Put me in the category that there's not much there in the way of green shoots, but I do expect this process of economic activity to become a little less bad than it was previously. And by the fourth quarter, I think we really ought to see some genuine signs of improvement. And if we get a correction in commodity prices, and I think that is on the cards or has already started, that would help because it would give us a little bit of respite in terms of commodity price inflation, but only for a while. We're back into, as put it this way, as growth picks up more, and of course it's being led by China, as growth picks up more around the globe, and it's a fair bet that in 2010 that even the moribund economies will be showing some sort of modest growth, we're going to be back into supply inelasticity meets rising demand territory as far as resources are concerned, and you've already seen how quickly some of them bounced back before that was interrupted by a current pause. Okay, now long down. This is a sort of a longish audio. I'm doing that because I'm feeling guilty. I've got to have a little minor little surgical procedure tomorrow, but it's going to take me out of the office for the whole day, unfortunately. What was I going to say? These long-dated government bonds, weaker stock markets, people pointing out that the economies are not as strong as they thought, and and possible dip in inflation figures should enable those long-dated government bonds to extend those rallies a little bit further. And we saw that today. They did rally in here today, although the U.S. Treasuries are well off their highs on the day. Now the dollar. This is a tougher one here. I mentioned that the dollar was a bit weaker in here today. The whole premise, I think, for well, there are two premises here for a dollar technical rally. One is that it had been pummeled, so it was oversold in the short term. And therefore, on that all change basis, we saw a few key reversals. For instance, Australian dollar getting a key day reversal after its very strong gains against the greenback. Now, so that's one premise, an oversold rally. And the other one is the so-called flight to quality that was very much the vogue from that August period onwards last year, throughout last year. Well, I think today, you'd really have to bribe someone to get them to describe the dollar as quality. And, well, maybe there's a little bit of a contrary indicator there in the short term. I think there's a lot of fundamental beef to back that view overall. And I don't mean, you know my view, at the risk of sounding cynical, that there are no quality fiat currencies. It's just which ones are least bad. And that's a game of pass the parcel here. But what we can say is that the U.S. economy needs a stronger, I beg your pardon, needs a weaker dollar. At least as much as any other economic region or any other country. And also, we know that there's a long history of the US playing fast and loose with its reserve currency status, meaning that the temptation just to print the stuff ad infinitum is very, 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 very considerable. So I think there's precedent for the US dollar getting some support when stock markets are experiencing a corrective phase, but I don't think there are all that too many people who will be frightened into dollars. If there are, it'll be because some of the American investors, including institutional investors who had pushed money offshore, may temporarily bring some of that back. But at any rate, I don't look for a big dollar rally. I don't look for a big bond market rally either, but I do think we see some modest rallies there. So that's pretty much it here once again. Again, I'll be out tomorrow, but I will be back on Friday. And meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.